everybody. I am Heather Markell. Welcome to another episode of The Inspired Nomad. By now, hopefully you know this show is all about inspiring those of you that might be in a life that you're not completely thrilled about, and you really want to either try to pursue a passion, and you think you can't. Well, this interview series is all about those of us that have left that stable environment, whatever that is, it's all about leaving that stability and known, and really about a life that we love with really loud cawing birds today. So I am enjoying South Africa, so outdoors. So I don't know what kind of animals will be around. So sorry about that. Today I'm very excited to have with us Angie House. So Angie, welcome. Tell us a little bit about where you're from and where you are now.
So right now I am currently in southern Thailand. I've been living here on an island called Koh Samui since about June, working with a writer's development program. I'm originally from the U.S., spent a lot of time growing up in the Midwest in Nebraska.
Wow.
So I've got some Midwest roots. Yeah, I did all my schooling in Nebraska. And then I moved to Arizona the last 10 years before I started traveling abroad. So that was about a year and a half ago that I started traveling abroad. So yeah, spent a good amount of time in the Phoenix area. And then, decided to hit the road after that.
That's great. Cool. So can you tell us a little bit about the stability that you had that you left behind?
Yeah, so I was actually working for a higher education corporation. You've probably heard of it. It's called University of Phoenix.
Yeah.
I worked there for about 8 years. And before that, I worked in other higher education corporations or, universities. Kaplan University, and I also worked at the Princeton Review, so just a couple of name drops there, but yeah, so my longest stint in higher ed was with University of Phoenix. I really loved it there.
Yeah, so if I'm following you correctly, you have this major stability, the traditional jobs, right, at the Princeton Review, a lot in education, University of Phoenix, and what made What made you even though decide to sort of pick up and go to Vietnam and do that in the first place?
I had kind of put a goal of my own on myself that I wanted to spend about 10 years in that industry so I could get, it was just my own personal goal. There was nothing really like driving except for my own self. It was originally a 5-year goal. And then by the time I had advanced in my career within education at the University of Phoenix, I said, okay, I'm going to give it a full 10 years for the industry overall. And so I had started making plans of what I wanted to do after that. The whole while, I just didn't know exactly how it would turn out and look. And that's why I mentioned the Peace Corps, because that was kind of my first initial, okay, I really want to do something like this. And to be honest with you, it's just a kind of a passion for freedom and to live a nomadic lifestyle.
Yep.
I really can't say that there's much more behind it than that, to be honest. I wish there was like some, awesome story or something, but it was just a matter of, I had really got into minimalism as well at the same time.
Yep.
So all these factors just kind of started to align and tie together. And the first steps I took was I really started looking at my budget and how I could save money. Just to travel in general. I hadn't really thought beyond like, okay, I'm going to travel abroad. I just wanted to travel. So it started out with little mini trips here and there in the U.S., whether that be to go see friends, things like that. So it was a really driving force too of travel, but also wanting to live a different lifestyle that didn't have to do with owning all these possessions, owning a car. I really was kind of fascinated by the idea of living somewhere I didn't have to own a car. But it was just kind of a hodgepodge of all these things that just sort of flooded me. Yeah, just as far as leaving that behind, I think it was just the sense to just be free. I think it was freedom that was really a huge part of my decision-making process, and freedom from not just a corporate job, but freedom from things. So freedom from not being attached to consumerism, not being attached to whatever you can think of. Just, you know, it started off also another seed that was planted was with holidays. I really started to scale back on spending on holiday stuff, like whether that be gifts or decor or, you know, Halloween candy or whatever. I really scaled back a lot on that. And that just kept feeding everything to get to that final product, I guess. So
it's funny that you say all that, because so many of these interviews have centered around this this consumerism and that we're all getting away from, that we believe that happiness actually revolves around having the money to have big spaces that we can fill with lots of stuff. I'm constantly amazed for myself, but also at how all of us are having this common experience that in fact, it's not the stuff that makes us happy. And yet there's so much fear around letting go of that stuff. So so I heard you actually were seeking out the minimalism, but do you remember at all what the process was like for you in giving up that stuff? Was it uplifting? Were there moments where you were scared? Like what happened there?
Yeah. I mean, I did go through quite a bit of roller coaster of emotions, and it just had to do, I think, just kind of in retrospect, looking back at just the attachment of what it meant to be attached to those things. So again, like I said, it started out with my goal was about budgeting. So it was cutting back on those things to feed my budget to travel. And then I just started reading more and more about, you know, what minimalism was all about, why people were doing it, how it affected, you know, saving money in different areas and that type of thing as well. So, you know, I just kind of took all those sort of life hacks, I guess you would say, for budgeting and stopped buying cable, stopped buying all any little extra things that weren't needed. And so that eventually spiraled into, okay, well, I'm only going to shop at thrift stores if I need something, some new article of clothing now. Okay, well, if I need something for the kitchen, I'm only going to shop at thrift stores also. And so it sort of spiraled into that as well.
Yep.
I don't know if that answers your question back to...
Well, it
does. How that started, but...
It just, I guess specifically where... Because some people that I listen to the show, I know are want to do what you just said, but you mentioned there's the attachment to the stuff. So do you have any tips or recollection of, you know, when you thought, oh, maybe I should keep this because, what did you do with it and how did you talk yourself out of keeping it?
Yeah, so I actually probably went through five or more phases of downsizing. Mm. And that all had to do with letting go of those things. So my sister actually helped me a great deal in doing this. And I'm kind of a reformed shopaholic. I love clothes. I absolutely just love clothes. Not expensive clothes. I just like certain, you know, having a lot of clothes. I don't know. Just a lot of cute things. So that was a big thing for me. I didn't spend a lot of money on like single items, but I was very attached to all of my items. I knew exactly how much I paid for things. Like it's a funny story amongst my family that if they look at something and they say, oh, that's cute, Angie, where'd you get that? I know exactly where I bought it, how much I paid for it. And it was just one of those things I was very attached to that as well as a, you know, reformed shopaholic to say that I got a budget or I got a good deal on something. So letting go of that emotional side of it is that you're so attached to the process and not just that it's an article of clothing, but what you invested time in, you know, what you spent on it, when you went shopping for it. So that was a huge process for me. So like the first step that I did was actually go through things that, and this is a common thing. I think I've heard this several times is go through things that you haven't worn in a year or things that don't fit anymore that you think you're going to fit into. And, you know, as a female, that's kind of a hard thing to do because you think, oh, okay, well, my weight fluctuates on a regular basis anyways. I really love these jeans. I don't want to get rid of them just because they don't fit right now. And I'm sure other women can relate to that. It's like your favorite pair of, you know, article of something. So that was my very first step. And that was really hard. It was heart-wrenching to try to, it sounds silly to say it now, but it was really hard to part with some of those items to say, okay, even though I love these pair of jeans and they don't fit perfectly now, but they could fit, you know, if I work really hard or whatever. And just letting that go and dumping it all and almost being to the point where you have that support system, like my sister, where she said no and just, you know, like kind of cut me off without rationalize, like without me letting me rationalize, like, oh, well, maybe it'll fit again in another couple months or what have you. So I think that was the first step. And that was hugely emotional to let go of those things. And so, yeah, I did really well. But again, it took me 6 months to wrap up or wrap my head around the idea of getting to the point of what my goal was to, you know, get rid of anything that I couldn't fit in my backpack, basically, or a suitcase. Wow. And I pretty much achieved it. It took me about a year of travel and 6 months prior to travel to get down to that. I went through various phases. And again, like I said, I spent about a year in Vietnam. So that really showed me like what I needed and what I didn't need. Again, still a hard phase because you think there are certain things you need that you don't bring because you think, oh, well, I can, you know, I don't need it. Or yep. If I do need it, I'll buy it there. But, you know, I ended up down that path as well and had to buy a few items that I didn't really want to have to buy but needed. So, you know, it's all a matter of trial and error, I think. But yep. So right before I ended up traveling abroad, I actually got a storage unit of the, I'll do the quotes, you know, just in case collection.
Yep.
The just in case collection was a 5x10 storage unit of, oh, I may need these things if and when I come back.
Yeah.
Which was completely the worst idea ever. But yeah. I think it was part of the process to get to the point where I am now that I've let go of all those things. I don't have a storage unit any longer. But it took me a year of paying for a storage unit to finally say, okay, I'm not going to pay this anymore. Cause it was about $130 a month. So that's not cheap. And when you add that up to, okay, well, what could I do for $130 a month traveling versus storing stuff that I haven't used in a year now?
Yep.
That really weighs on you. So immediately the first time I went back to the States, I was right there at that storage unit, closing it out within a couple days. So, and that all ended up being donated to charity, more of my stuff given away, sold it. Yeah. So,
you know, from what I can tell, you look very much alive. You look very healthy despite giving up all these things.
Thank you.
Right?
So, well, thanks.
So
probably the best compliment I've had in a while.
So but what does it feel like? Like now that you've given up all that stuff, I mean, how do you feel about it?
Most days it feels amazing. I'm not going to lie. I have my days where there are things that I miss about the traditional life, the traditional, you know, acquiring of things, you know, washing the same set of laundry week after week.
Yes.
It does get old. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, there's the glamour of traveling. People, you know, really talk it up, and I loved my decision that I made. But there are, you know, things that you're not going to like about anything you do, no matter how awesome you feel it is at the time. So, yeah, I mean, you know, those types of things really kind of bother me. But that's so rare, and I guess I have a really good sense of humor where I just say, okay, well, whatever, you know, like nobody cares but me, you know, like I could wear the same shirt 3 days in a row and my, you know, co-living people that I am shacked up with here, they don't know or even care.
And I'm chuckling because I actually have my laundry hanging in the bathroom of this place.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I've worn that 20,000 times. This has a hole in it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like I'm in a constant, you know, state of downsizing too. So it's like you have that on one hand where you're tired of all your clothes, but you also want to still downsize. Like I brought this last time I started out in my travel venture, when I came to Thailand, I brought a bigger bag this time than I had. I actually did a checked bag where before when I traveled to Vietnam, I just did carry on only. And so this time I'm glad that I sort of did the carry-on route, but at the same time I'm like, I don't need all that stuff. I haven't worn probably 3/4 of it. So it's, again, still a learning experience.
No, but your choice of Thailand, was that, did you know people there? Did you just want to go? Like, why did you choose Thailand?
Yeah, so when I was in Vietnam, I'm sure you're aware, you have to do, you know, visa hops or border bounces or whatever you want to call them, and to renew, to make sure your visa is up to date. So in Vietnam, I had a year visa there, but I still had to leave every 90 days. So my choice of place to go, I had some friends that lived in two places, Chiang Mai, Thailand, and Canggu, Bali. So I went to both of those places on my visa runs. And that was the main thing. I'm kind of the traveler that likes to go see friends. I even did this in the U.S. I'm not a big traveler that is like a sightseer.
Yep.
So that's never been a huge part of my travel like desires. I always wanted to go see friends and see what their life is like. And yep. that's another thing. I'm kind of obsessed with or addicted to experiences. So every new thing that I'm doing for a reason. Like, I'm not just travel hopping just to travel hop around. There's always something that I'm doing, whether it's work related or learning something new, trying something new, whatever.
And as it sounds like basically you're a solo traveler, but perhaps along the way, meeting up with friends and so forth. How are you finding that experience of the solo travel?
Yeah, I mean, I think solo travel gets a really good rap. A lot of women find a lot of great benefit from it. I do as well. However, I'm a horrible solo traveler. I hate planning. So, a part of me wanting to always go see friends is that I know there's always going to be somebody there that I can visit or hang out with. So I am kind of like a fake solo traveler, I guess. I don't know. But I just hate the planning part of traveling so much. So anytime anybody is willing to plan it for me and say, hey, just come and visit me and we'll figure out what we're going to do when you get here, that's perfect for me.
Yeah.
So I enjoy the solo part of traveling where I can up and go and do whatever I want, whenever I want, without having to plan with someone. But that part of, you know, doing the, because a lot of people will solo travel and do the sightseeing or group tours and stuff like that. And nothing against that, obviously, but it's just never been my travel style, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, I'm a horrible solo traveler. I will hands down admit that.
Well, that's awesome though. So, rewarding, because for other people listening, you actually, I'm sure plenty of people aren't quitting their life and moving on because they don't want to solo travel. But if you think about who do you know in other places in the world that you can go visit as a starting point, that's actually a wonderful tip. And in fact, I related also to what you said earlier about take a bite-sized chunk of the experience. If you think travel, for example, is something you want to do, then go on these mini vacations and go check that out. And then thinking like, who do I know? And oh my God, I forgot about my friend, you know, Nancy, who lives in Timbuktu. Maybe I should go visit her, what that's like.
Yeah.
Do a short run. So I love that. I love that as a tip for anyone listening as a way
to absolutely. Start and what F1. And when I started to kind of think outside of the US as far as traveling, that can be a scary thing for a lot of people. And I feel like that's a scary thing for a lot of US citizens in general, because for the most part, the majority of us are just not travelers. You know, that just seems to be a common thread that I find, like, among other travelers when I'm, you know, here abroad or whatever. So what I started to do is I really started to find a network online of people that were travelers and were, I just stumbled upon people that were also working online. At the time when I was wanting to travel, I was like, well, how am I even going to afford this? I was just trying to figure out how I could save as much as possible and like stockpile as much money. I didn't realize at the time that there were people, you know, working online. I always knew like work at home type jobs or freelance stuff, but I just never connected the dots until I started looking on Facebook for, you know, communities and Facebook groups of just travelers in general and wanting to connect with people that way and looking for like programs that you can go do stuff, not just sightseeing tours and things like that. You know, I just think that opened up my eyes to even more, just a bigger landscape of things that I could do outside of just teaching English in a foreign country. And that just set my wheels like off and running, because I was like, oh, okay, I can do this super long term and not just be stationary teaching it, you know, one place.
Yeah.
And so now my mission is to do it as long as I can sustain myself.
I love it. So talking about sustenance, I mean, how are you doing it? So I heard teaching English. What other kinds of things are you doing to afford sustaining this long term?
Yeah, so the main thing that I am doing is freelance writing and social media management. So those are both pretty common avenues that a lot of people will go down and start to learn the skills needed to do those types of things. Finding a community of like-minded people through travel led me to realize that it was more than just travel. People were working online, and that really opened my eyes to ways of people that are, you know, doing the digital nomad thing and extending their travel beyond just as a vacation or holiday, making it an actual lifestyle. And that, like I said, opened up a whole new world for me that I was off and running with. So
I think what I'm hearing is that, you know, there's, first off, you give a lot up to be able to have this nomadic lifestyle. When you have it, then the sustenance comes in unexpected ways. You tap into Facebook groups, people, other resources that maybe you weren't even aware of before starting this life. And you kind of delve into
absolutely
a new way of work. And because your life now, you're just set up, in your case, you know, not buying anything that you don't actually need. Like everything has to be in a bucket of need, otherwise you don't get it. Or others of us have just severely lowered our costs as well. You don't need as much money. So that's the interesting thing too, I think. Like the work that we're doing probably doesn't earn anything like the corporate jobs that we had. But it's okay, because we actually don't
right.
need those high salaries for the lifestyles that we're living now. Is that also, would that correctly summarize your experience as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a part of that, right along with what you're saying, is when I started to look at what my salary was, I was making about 65-70K in my job in the US.
Yep.
And when I started to break it down of what all my bills were, what I was spending on needing to sustain that life,
yep.
it just started to not make sense to me anymore. I was buying all these clothes, buying, you know, car loan, all these things that I was buying fed into just having sustained that corporate lifestyle or that traditional type of lifestyle. And it made no sense to me anymore.
Yep.
And so breaking that down and realizing, you know, if I didn't have this, I wouldn't need to have this job. And I live off, you know, next to nothing now, but I do a lot of, you know, work exchange type things where currency is not only about, you know, paper money. Sometimes it's the exchange of, you know, can I get a ride to the airport and I'll, you know, whatever, work on your Facebook for you or whatever, you know, something like that. I think that's the hard part of also, like, people that are wanting to do this type of lifestyle, is just giving up how much people are obsessed with money. And, you know, obviously you need money to get by and food and the main necessities of life. But, you know, it's not always about the exchange of that paper that is requirement to get by day to day. So the lifestyle is still something that is achievable, even if you have debt, as long as you are working towards those same goals without having to pay, you know, a car payment or, you know, whatever.
Cool. No, I love that. And as you as you think about the past year or two and the radical life change that you've made, are there any insights that you've gained that maybe were surprising or unexpected from this experience?
Oh, wow. Yeah, lots. You know, I have a common occurrence pretty much daily that I will say to someone or to myself, you know, this is life. What is life? You know, what are we all doing? What am I doing? And every day it's a different answer. And I've kind of used that as my own type of meditation or manifestation of welcoming in opportunities as they come. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I share that a lot with people on a regular basis, is that take the opportunities as they come. I started to have that mindset when I started to think differently about, you know, venturing off on doing this different type of lifestyle. And it served me so well without even trying. And I don't know where I picked this up from. I don't know where it came from. I didn't read a book or anything. It was just something that came kind of to me or within me, just to say, hey, whatever opportunity is thrown my way, if it makes sense to me, I'm going to say yes. And it's just worked for me. Instead of trying to control everything, I think people get so obsessed with trying to control every next move or every next opportunity. If somebody says, hey, Angie, would you be interested in doing this, you know, in January? If it makes sense for me, I'll say yes. But I think a lot of people are resistant to that sometimes, just because it maybe doesn't fit their perfect little plan. And not having a five-year plan was another key indicator of me kind of resisting that traditional corporate life. A lot of people would always ask, you know, what is your five-year plan? What is your five-year plan? Like, that was always a thing, and it drove me crazy. Yep. Because I didn't want to have a five-year plan, and people make you feel like you are less than if you don't have this concrete five-year plan. And I said, well, what if my five-year plan is to just experience things as they come? And that wasn't good enough, you know? So just, I think those two main things have been my driving force, especially in the last couple years of life. But, you know, thinking back, I think there's always been kind of a relic of them, you know, as I've progressed and into my 40s now. I can't believe I'm 43 years old. That's crazy. I don't feel 43 at all. It's so bizarre.
But, I'm a little older than you. Yeah. So I know.
Yeah. Like, it's so weird. Like, I'm looking at myself in this video here, and I'm like, who are you? But yeah, so.
yeah. No, thank you for saying that, because I was actually thinking of that question, but you answered it. So there was like a mind connection. That was good.
Nice.
Because, yeah, I find that difficult too. I think people in a traditional lifestyle do very much think in terms of goals and plans. And I am asked all the time by people in that lifestyle, well, what's next? Where are you headed? What, you know, what are you doing? Like, when are you going back to real life? And I find that really hard, because it's a complete, I feel, one, there's a lack of understanding of the experience that we're having, and that in fact, the destination is the journey, or the journey is the destination. I guess I don't, it may be very difficult to understand that. If I think back to my prior life, that was metrics and goals. So yeah. So thank you for pointing that out, because it sounds like you've had that same thing where on the one hand, we can appreciate that they're, you know, in that other boxed corporate lifestyle, you have a need for goals and destinations, but outside of that, you don't. And in fact, it can be in your mind, like, this is my lifestyle now for the moment. For how long? I don't know. I mean, there's the sustenance piece. There's the interest piece, you know, the things that are difficult about our lives may, you know, for now, I don't know. It sounds like you're on the same boat where, yeah, there's a lot of things about this lifestyle that aren't fun, but the things that are make it all worthwhile. But if that's
absolutely
right, you know, then of course, you know, then you make a change. And I think also there's a, as I'm talking this out with you, I'm realizing too that I think there's sometimes like a need, especially if you're from that corporate mindset, that you have to plan out, well, if, you know, what's going to make you decide it's not working? And then how many months are you going to plan out so that you, you can then change gears? And it might be like, actually, I'm just going to trust that in the moment, it's like, if I decide this isn't for me, I'm going to make a plan right in that moment. And that plan is going to take me where I need to go. And I think that's a very scary thing for people that need planning. Kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's that sense of feeling like saying, I don't know is okay. And I've become really, really comfortable with that answer, where maybe at some point in life, I felt guilty for saying that answer, where now I don't have to.
It's the irony of what you just said. I was thinking is that all of my best bosses in corporate were the ones that could say, I don't know. And the ones that made up an answer because they couldn't bear the thought of admitting they didn't know were the worst bosses to me.
And so
it's quite interesting, again, for anyone listening, as you're hearing this, that, you know, that think about that in your own life, like where you don't know answers, mm-hmm. around you don't know, and you're hiding that. And why isn't it okay not to know something? And what can you, as a first step to your own journey, what can you do to be more accepting of not knowing the answer and still making a decision to go towards your passion? So on that note,
absolutely.
Before we wrap up, do you have any last moment, like tips or anything you want to share with the people listening about what you've done or how they could maybe take a step towards their own journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing that my advice would be is if you have any interest in a different kind of lifestyle, if there's even just an inkling of like, hey, I would really like to have a travel lifestyle or just whatever a different lifestyle may be. Obviously, the people watching this are probably more travel-oriented people, I imagine, or unconventional idealists. If you have any inkling at all, start researching and just taking those steps. And by that, take one thing, do one thing. What's one thing that can change your life towards that being your, you know, an action-oriented goal? And just start doing it. That's it.
Got it. That's perfect. So Angie, if someone listening to this wants to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to contact me is on my website, which is a Strikingly website. So it's just angiehouse.strikingly.com.
Okay.
And that's the best way to reach me because you can find my email there and all my socials, portfolio, et cetera.
Cool. Do you want to share do you have a Facebook or Twitter, Instagram, anything like that?
Yeah. The other way to get find me and follow my travels, if you're interested in seeing, you know, what I am doing as far as the programs I join, et cetera, that's at chasing_Angie on Instagram.
Cool. I love it. Cool.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining. This has been such a fun conversation and a lot of deep insights, I think. And I always love the resonance. So, you know, especially, I mean, we're on different sides of the earth right now, or well, sort of.
Yeah.
Not as opposite as I am usually. But, you know, different backgrounds, and yet having this shared experience is really lovely. And I think something I love, because when I first ventured out, I thought I was just completely crazy. And the more I'm in it, the more I'm meeting wonderful people like you that are, there really are a lot of us out there, and there's a huge community. And if you're out there and you haven't done this and you think you're crazy, you're not. There's so many of us that have taken this dive. We're still okay, we're making it. So I have faith that you can too. So if you are listening to this video series or via the podcast, and you think, wow, I've actually made that jump, I've been on the road for a while, I should be a guest on your show. Well, I would love to have you. And you can apply to do that at www.interviewquestionnaire.com. We also have a Facebook group, The Inspired Nomads, where you can feel free to join, and we're trying to grow that. Feel free to pop by and become a member. And otherwise, I will look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The Inspired Nomad. Thank you so much for listening and joining us as always. Take care. Bye.